Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the Financial Times podcast on the main developments this week in the foreign exchange market. I am Roger Blitz, and on the agenda this week is the old central bank bogeyman, inflation. In Canada, they are so confident that it can be tamed that they went ahead and raised rates for the first time in 7 years. But in the US, such confidence seems to have disappeared. And despite strong growth and jobs creation, the old doubts about inflation have resurfaced. Meanwhile, the notable development in the UK was the initial silence of Bank of England Governor Ben Broadbent on the big debate about whether to raise rates, and then his relative dovishness. So, one step forward, two steps back, maybe. And how will the European Central Bank view the inflation conundrum when it meets next week? With me to discuss all these developments is, I'm delighted to say, Kamal Sharma, G10 FX strategist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Kamal, welcome. Just starting with the Bank of Canada, they've raised rates. This is a moment, isn't it? First central bank outside of the US to raise rates for 7 years.
I mean, who would have thought that the Bank of Canada would have been the first to follow the Fed? It's really reasserting its traditional role as the first mover behind the Fed. Historically, they have obviously had very strong links. But, given the run-up of hawkish commentary over the past month and a half, it was almost impossible for them to turn back. They had a stated goal. They wanted to signal to the market that they were ready to tighten policy, effectively take back the 250 basis points or the 50 basis points of rate cuts. Yes. That they thought were in an emergency measure to stabilize the economy.
And he followed through on the rate hike, because there was a lot of talk about buy the rumor, sell the fact, the Canadian dollar is going to fall off. Hey presto, it rose 1% because of the very strong view he gave that actually we're probably ready to do this again.
Indeed, I think the market sometimes gets a little bit tied up in this dovish rate hike narrative, which has been a persistent theme between the markets and the Fed. This was not a dovish rate hike. This was a rate hike with hawkish tones. We still expect the Bank of Canada will hike again, probably in Q1 2018, but we readily admit that the risks are that could be sooner rather than later. But certainly, if we look at the Canadian economy, a common thing amongst many central banks is that, yes, inflation continues to undershoot. There are some transitory factors, which means it will be under target. But again, the age-old problem of imbalances in your economy, a very strong Canadian housing market, housing market strength in other countries, and obviously financial conditions, which Yellen has been talking about, are the major driver here. That there is some frustration, I think, that inflation still meaningfully remains below the central bank targets.
Contrast that, Stephen Poloz, with Janet Yellen, who told the US Congress, having said at last month's Fed meeting, actually, I'm also relaxed about inflation. She said, I'm not so sure. We're going to actually watch it pretty closely. And there may be some transitory elements of inflation, actually. There may be things we don't know about. So she rode back a bit. She went wobbly, didn't she?
You could almost say that she's reverted back to type, in a way, Roger. Exactly. Lael Brainard effectively flagged what Yellen was going to say by saying that, you know, we're not too far away from our concept of neutral Fed funds rate, which suggests maybe another 50 to 100 basis points on top of the Fed funds. But as far as Yellen is concerned, again, since the Sintra symposium, there has been this collective thought amongst markets that maybe we are seeing something more coordinated. Maybe there is central banks are prepared to look through their inflation targets, look at other things in the economy, such as frothy equity markets, as Yellen mentioned. But ultimately, you know, a central bank is judged on its one mandate, which is this inflation goal. And Yellen has effectively reverted back to what she always has been, which has been more dovish than many on the FOMC.
Which can only confuse the markets. Because look, I mean, there's the reaction to the Canada move. Up goes Canadian two-year yields. Up goes the Canadian dollar. There's Yellen. Down goes the US dollar. Down goes Treasury yields. So, I mean, look, typically, typically the market, you know, looks at one issue and faces both ways on this. I mean, do we need to? Am I in danger of overinterpreting these contrasting market moves?
I don't think you are. I think one thing we've got to remember is that not only did the dollar underperform against the CAD, but it's been underperforming against sterling, the euro, the Swedish krona, Kiwi, and Aussie. What is that telling us? Well, it's telling us one thing, that the Fed has always been the lead central bank in terms of tightening. And when we head into a Fed tightening cycle, the dollar's rate advantage generally tends to widen against these currencies, and therefore the dollar outperforms. But hey, presto, we're into a Fed tightening cycle, and we've had the first mover behind them, which is the Bank of Canada. So ultimately, if you look at front-end nominal two-year rate differentials for the US versus its G10 counterparts, that's hardly moved. In fact, it's been moving slightly against the dollar. So the Fed generally helps the dollar into a tightening cycle, but through a tightening cycle, the dollar generally tends to underperform.
The other thing that people were looking out for was comment about the unwinding of the balance sheet. And actually, she pretty much said the same thing, didn't she? It's going to happen at some point this year. But is she, do you think, anticipating the kind of market reaction to that? I mean, do you think the market's still to price that in?
I think that Bullard made a very interesting point a couple of weeks ago when he said, I want to make balance sheet normalization as boring as possible. So you can see where they're coming from here. September obviously is going to be the month where we expect a more active and detailed discussion. We await the details. The Fed, the New York Fed, has released some numbers as to how it thinks it's going to taper the balance sheet. Simple fact is no one's done this on the scale that we've seen before. So it remains to be seen how much of an impact this could well be on the dollar. But certainly if you believe that a tightening of the balance sheet leads to some tightening of financial conditions, then you know that part of the Fed's mandate is actually doing some of the job that Yellen's been concerned about, i.e. this easing of financial conditions.
Kamal, the Bank of England, thank God we don't have to talk about Brexit, because it didn't seem like the market was really reacting to anything to do with Brexit this week. But there seems to be a heightened expectation about the next policymaker's comments. Broadbent goes silent at the beginning of the week. He later amplifies his views. What do you think of the market's take on those developments this week?
Well, it's interesting to see, Roger, that the Broadbent's comments that came out in one of the newspapers in Scotland saw sterling come under immediate pressure. But the resilience of sterling remains quite remarkable, despite the fact that the data has been softening. And I think what we're seeing here is that we've had a significant adjustment in sterling over the past year. We all know that. I think part of that view was based on the narrative that, yes, the UK economy is likely to slow down. We're seeing some moderate slowdown in UK economic growth. I don't think that that's going to be the catalyst for further sustained losses in sterling. I think what's holding sterling up here is the general perception that cable at 130 still remains a very attractive opportunity to invest in if you're a foreign investor.
The old issue of the value of sterling. But I mean, but just what you were just saying about data, are you suggesting that data can continue to go south, but sterling won't go south with it?
Well, if you look at the consensus estimates, we're not looking for a significant slowdown in the economy. I think we have 0.1 as a quarterly outturn this year. But ultimately, you know, the market has factored that in. You can see the level of UK data surprises, which are now their most negative for a number of months now. Yet sterling has remained relatively resilient. I'd also point out that the pound generally tends to be a pro risk on currency. It generally tends to perform well during periods of risk on, like we see with the Aussie dollar or the Kiwi. So it's performing very much as it historically has done through business cycles.
Okay. Come on, we can't leave this week's edition without talking about next week and the ECB and its meeting on Thursday. With this whole idea about the quantitative easing retreat, everybody really wants to focus on the ECB, because presumably with the ECB moving, others will move, you know, maybe Sweden, Norway, others will come and follow. To what extent is next week just another staging post, or is it a little bit more critical?
I think we think it's another staging post. The baseline view at Bank of America is that there's going to be a slow, drawn-out affair lasting more than, the next next year or so. We think that, unfortunately, that's the view. Yeah. I think, you know, a more active discussion on balance sheet tapering will take place in September.
Right.
Over the last 48 hours, I would say, though, that the euro has come under pressure across the board. Yeah. So I think the market now is maybe just paring back some of this euphoria that we saw post the Sintra comments, euro dollar towards that psychologically important 115 level. The market probably is just a little bit hesitant, a little bit more, you know, focused on what Draghi may or may not say. The risks are obviously that, you know, there isn't a further clear direction of travel, which may continue to weigh in the euro, which is our baseline line view. But certainly, you know, they are moving in a direction and a very stated direction, but they're going to take their time about clarifying what their intentions are.
It just feels that this shift away from QE has begun. It really, and Canada really set it off today. But it's going to be, as you say, slow. It's going to be bitty. It's going to have full of stops and starts, and it's going to take its time.
Absolutely. I mean, remember that the ECB has to contend with the fact that core inflation remains extremely low in the region. Yes. It may be giving a little bit of a help by the fact that we have a reformist French Prime Minister who is starting the wheels of motion in terms of tax reform, and that may give the European economy a bit of a fillip. But ultimately, the inflation remains that mandate. No matter how much we are frustrated by the fact that central banks haven't achieved it, 2% remains their goal. And we still think that inflation pressures are likely to wane, particularly now given we've seen a bit of a run-up in euro dollar towards that 115 level as well. So, you know, the ECB does want to start tapering. It does want to end QE, but it also has to be cognizant. It can't be too fast too soon.
My thanks to Kamal Sharma of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Join us again next week on Hard Currency for reaction to that ECB meeting and all the other developments affecting the foreign exchange market. Until next.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
This week, it's goodbye.